You are listening to Everything Under the Sun, our little half-hour little news show, a collaboration between Katie and Kay and Soper Sun, which is one of my favorite kinds of collaborations, where we get to bring in guests from stories that filled in the week's paper, which just hit the street on Thursday. So don't worry if you haven't picked it up yet. You can get the inside scoop right here and now. And I am not alone, which I love. I love not just being speaking out into the void. I am joined here with Pat Curry. And Sydney, I spelled your name probably 1,000 times, but I have no idea how to pronounce it. I'm so sorry.
That's okay. It's just like the onion, shallot.
See, you would think so. I'm like, is it shallot? Is it? Well, thank you both so much for joining me. And you all are, Patrick, you founded Footsteps Marketing.
That's correct.
And now you have done something amazing with such grace that rarely happens as beautifully as it has. And that's, you've hired a CEO in Sydney. You've kind of like watched your baby kind of go through a growth spurt and handed over some leadership. But you're still very much a huge part of the team and have both, between the two of you, whether spearheading or just overseeing some big changes in that team and what being at Footsteps Marketing really means. Can you kind of speak a little bit to that?
Well, I guess my mother always said better late than never. And that would be the case here. We had a really good run at Footsteps for a while with some various business development directions. And at a certain point in time, it wasn't working as we had visioned it. The whiteboard kind of fell off the wall. And so fortunately, I was able to consult with people I trust and respect, and their opinion was that it was time for professional management and that I should take a role in the company. And so with very little ado at that moment in time, I said, I'm in. So we found, we went searching for, at that time, a general manager. And got started on that path. And then Sydney joined us 15 months ago as general manager. And recently, because of the way she has conducted the company and herself, been moved to CEO of the company. And it's been an incredible 15 months. 15 months of the greatest success of Footsteps, happy culture. And it is due to Sydney and the team's response to each other that has resulted in where we are today.
Where we are today being an award-winning company as of yesterday evening, I understand. Congratulations. And you want to talk about the Wellness Consciousness Award and the recognition that you got and what led to that?
Yeah, we're so excited about that. We, the Wellness Conscious Business of the Year Award is what we won, which was very humbling, especially considering our counterparts that were part of the ceremony as well. And it was sort of a funny thing because unlike a lot of the chamber member award ceremonies, it was actually self-nominated. And so we had the opportunity to go through, I think it was in December, maybe November, and fill out a form that it was pretty extensive. And it was, what was nice about it was going through this form and filling out all these questions about policies that we've written and programs that we've implemented and really getting to highlight all the cool stuff we started doing 15 months ago. And, you know, one of them's like a really simple rec and wellness reimbursement form. Our employees, if they want to buy crystals or get acupuncture or get a gym membership or buy new running shoes, whatever makes them feel better, as long as it helps them with their wellness, we'll reimburse them for it up to a certain amount. And it's all of our employees for every calendar year. And so little programs like that really made a big difference. And it was really fun to go through the process of the application and the nomination, because even if I really thought we weren't going to win because we're not HealthLinks members, but we had a good run and we filled the form out fully and it felt really good. And we got to sort of reflect on that. And then to be selected by the chamber board members just felt really special, because we do work really hard in the community, but we also work really hard for each other. And that's one of the best things about our team, is that I think Pat and I both consistently say that we work for our team, which I feel like is an important piece of our, you know, Pat's Pat moves through the world with a lot of grace and humility, and that is a wonderful thing to work with, and especially someone of his level and prestige in the community. And then to be able to come into a company that's like Footsteps, that has a solid team that's weathered a lot of storms with us, and they work hard and they work really well together and they care a lot about each other, and it's just lovely. So to be able to come in and help sort of officiate that and make policies that make sure everybody takes breaks and everybody's comfortable at their desk and everybody has access or is able to get reimbursement for, you know, part of the article you wrote, which was so lovely, talking about the idea of mental health and mindfulness and access, and all those things really play a huge role in where we live and why we live here. And the fact that we can find the caliber of coworker that we found with all of our Footsteps members is just, I mean, it's luck or it's serendipity or it's just magic, and I'll take all of it.
Well, I have to say, I know you're relatively new-ish to Carbondale, but you are already full-fledged Carbondalian. Did you notice, Pat, when she led with all of the reimbursement programs for the things you could do to make you feel better? The first thing you listed was, if you want to buy crystals.
We support all types of wellness.
Absolutely. Well, and you do, though. I mean, one of the things that, you know, so impressed me, you know, we were talking in the interview for the newspaper article, I do have a marketing background, and that burn and churn, late night oil, you know, always be closing mentality. That's not at all the vibe that I felt. And when I was speaking to you and you just were like, oh yeah, we were just, you know, sitting around our little gong. And, you know, when we were staging photos for the article, and Pat, you were just like, oh, I've got singing bowls I can bring in. We can recreate this. Mm-hmm. And it was like, wait, where am I right now? Yeah. And I think that speaks to such a deeper maturity for a company. Mm-hmm. So can you speak a little bit to, you know, it sounded like a very egalitarian process in terms of identifying your needs in setting that kind of wellness agenda of the seminars and what that looks like, and, you know, coinciding with trying to get ahead of some of the stress that comes with the holidays. Mm-hmm. Can you just walk us through that process?
Sure. Would you like to?
Well, I'll take a little trip back in history. My first enterprise in Aspen was a software company, and we had two partners who were young parents when we got started, and they both said the first day at work, we're not working weekends. Mm-hmm. And it's almost now 30 years later, and no company I've ever been part of has ever worked weekends. It's the rule before you start. Yeah. And then the culture comes along afterward, and the clients, and once you bring them on, they understand who you are. And so we are pretty much a straight up 8 to 5, 10 to 6, you know, 11 to 7, whatever works for people. A 5-day week company it's a design and it's an intention. Mm-hmm. And the lure at times is, wow, we could be so much more productive or profitable if we could just have everybody work Saturdays, even if it was in their crunch. Well, no, let's not have crunches. Let's set expectations. And so I'm happy that that has endured in the company. And then Sydney very much and the team supports that.
Yeah. And last fall, I was lucky enough for a professional development opportunity to attend Lead with Love in Aspen, which wasn't at all what I thought it was going to be, but it turned out to be really just lovely. I mean, it was wonderful. And one of the more impressive and like impactful seminars that I attended was about your personal relationship with money. And I'm 33. I graduated from a great state school in Texas, and I never once was taught to balance a checkbook, how to deal with credit cards, what student debt's going to look like after you're out of school, why cash jobs are great except for when you don't put it in the bank. Like, you know, there were all these things, and I thought, oh man, I'm so lucky that I have access to family that is, they're really bright, and they're able to help me learn all this at 25 and 26 after I was in the Peace Corps. And I just think, man, I bet if I had that upbringing and I was lucky and privileged, then I bet people who weren't or had totally different upbringings might not have access to what is an alternative to a 401k. How do you effectively save money? What is the importance of, you know, and during the holidays, every year we try to do a holiday bonus and a little holiday party. And this year we just had this major cultural shift intentionally in our company. And part of it was there was a little bit of a storm around the concern about the money we would lose because we were leaving an industry behind. And part of that fear was felt because the holidays were coming, and a couple of our employees have family that live really far away or have small children. And we, you know, we made it work to give bonuses, which was lovely. But I thought the coolest thing we did was, instead of having a traditional holiday party, which we, you know, who doesn't love that awkwardness with liquor, is the idea that we did a paid volunteer day, and we worked at Stepping Stones for about 5 or 6 hours. And then we went and had cocktails in town with appetizers, and it was awesome. I mean, it cost the company so much less. Everybody left way happier. We were able to support a nonprofit that we believe in, and, you know, everybody got paid. So it was really sweet, and it gave this momentum. And I thought about, we were approached a little while ago by a great wellness organization that offered to do our first seminar free, and that was the one that you actually came in afterwards, and now we're hooked. I mean, everybody loved it, and it was one of those things where it's like, boy, I ask people to take webinars all the time on how to improve their email marketing strategy and how can we talk better and more fluently about SEO. Why would we not do something about mental health, mindfulness, self-compassion, financial mindfulness? Like, it all just made sense. And luckily we have it in our budget. We put it in it. We built it into our budget to provide a rec pass for our employees and their families to do mindfulness seminars, and then also the rec reimbursement. And it all felt like it fell into place. Like, the person who sort of introduced us to this wellness group she's a good friend and a colleague. And it's just like, oh yeah, no problem. That sounds great. So it was just a really fluid thing.
And, you know, in watching Sydney work with the team, this might be generational. I had the most unbelievable, incredible ideas for how our culture is going to be unbelievably special and different. And month after month, I went out and just informed everybody how special and different these opportunities were, and watched everybody go, yeah, whatever. And I've watched Sydney, as she relates to the team, step back and say, well, that didn't work. What should we try that? Well, let's try that. Well, how about that? Mm-hmm. And just works it and always works it in conjunction with the team. And so that's been another, and my intentions were great, and all of our intentions were great, and some of the ideas were good. However, I watched how easy it is to sit back and say, well, what do you want to do? And right. That's how a lot of these things have come about.
Definitely. I want to segue a little bit in our last couple minutes. You know, I love how serendipitous it was that we were able to do this article, and all this cool wellness stuff came up, and then you got some local recognition for it. But I also think that it's worth talking about the local recognition coming, as my mic drops, coming right on the heels of you really recommitting as a company to your local community. Yeah. You know, the business model that, Pat, you did what people dream of doing. You had all these corporate accounts and, you know, kind of big name, household name companies in this, you know, not little, but, you know, mid-sized agency in Little Carbondale, Colorado. And then all of a sudden that wasn't really working anymore. And I was really impressed with your willingness to just speak about that. Can I put you on the spot and talk? Sure. To talk about that?
Yeah. I'm assuming we're leaning towards the
gun
issue.
We're leaning towards the gun issue.
So when I first came on board, we worked with three major industries. One is a hardware industry. One is an outdoor industry. And the other one is an archery industry. And around the end of the Obama era, a lot of our sporting goods stores sort of turned into gun stores. And we just sort of went with it, no problem. And then, you know, all the tragedies that are these mass shootings kept coming and coming. And, you know, one of our long-term, just wonderful employees, we had this really deep heart-to-heart on how it actually feels immoral to ask a mother to gun sales the day of or after a mass shooting. That just, it just sort of stabbed me in the gut. And I just wasn't super willing to bow anymore to that. And luckily at the point that it happened, I had, I think I had the heart of the executive team. I had sort of won them over at that point. And we had a little bit of battle only because of the financial impact that we were concerned about.
Sure.
But the emotional impact of making a really positive change, and we did it in a really conscientious and kind way. We didn't just dump them. We didn't kill their sites. We went to every one of them individually and said, we're making a cultural shift. We absolutely believe in small business. We want to support you during either a transition to another firm, or we'll train you how to do your own email marketing or website updates or whatever. We're just no longer willing to make the marketing effort for you because we don't believe in it. And I think some shit got slung to me in particular, and I made a point of that it was definitely sort of my rock to die on, and so I wanted to make sure that I received all the negative impact. And I think with the exception of a couple of little passerbys, I landed most of it, and luckily I could weather it because it was something that I knew the company stood behind. The team was exceptionally supportive of it. The revenue loss was minuscule compared to what we've been able to, instead of trying really hard to figure out how to do this well and not have to have it on our souls, we were able to go to 10 nonprofits in the last year and say, hey, we want to help you find the right people. We want to help you get donations. We want to do this. And we made a very intentional shift in our corporate culture and intentional shift in our corporate karma. And I think it's paying off, and it's been a big year.
It was amazing because Sydney's strategy was so clear. There would likely be another time, we're going to get out of this market, but don't worry. It wasn't that. It was, we're going to exit this market, comma, and we're going to go into these markets. And who sitting in the room wouldn't say, oh, okay, let's go.
Yeah.
And so it was the conjunction there, and we're moving forward in this way. Mm-hmm. That was the complete strategy.
Well, and I love what you said, Pat, too, in your particular role now with the company. It was an opportunity. It was almost an invitation for you to get back out and know your hometown mm-hmm. again in a new way.
So. Well, what led up to that moment, and the reason it was a little more obvious decision, Sydney was with us no less than a month. She was just literally moved to town, mm-hmm. and we had three or four major, really wonderful accounts, RVR, Habitat Humanity, Super Sun, KD&K, and about a month here, she said, why is it when I tell people that I work for Footsteps, they don't have any idea who I'm working for? What's up with that, Pat?
We're a marketing agency,
and,
Pat.
And that's when she pointed to the door and said, get out there.
That's
and
so great.
That strategy started within a few weeks of Sydney's tenure.
That's awesome. Well, thank you both so much for joining me. I love that Footsteps Marketing is no longer, you know, in it, like, where is this? It's in Carbondale. No, you are mm-hmm. a staple to the community. And I just am so thrilled to have gotten to know you both. And thank you so much for what you're doing in town. And congratulations on getting some formal recognition for it.
Thanks. Thanks for having us today. Thanks, Super Sun, for mm-hmm. yesterday, and also thanks to the chamber and to the community. It was a big 24 hours.
Yeah, I'm excited.
So it was great.
Well, yeah, thank you so much.
I will let you rest. And if you wouldn't mind opening the door so I can usher in our next guest from another local staple that everybody knows of. Wes, are you out there? I saw you walk in. So another big, big story in this week's newspaper was one that my editor, Will Graham Waugh, wrote in conjunction with CARE. And yeah, make yourselves comfortable, right? And this one was really, really near and dear to my heart because I never waste an opportunity to talk about my fur baby and how fortunate I feel to live in this area and have secure housing that, you know, Sundance is a permanent tenant in, but we are very lucky and in some ways the exception. So thank you so much for what you both are doing. Do you mind introducing yourselves to our listeners and kind of talking about your undertaking?
Sure. My name is Meg Plum. And I am a landscape architect with Design Workshop, but I am a member of this year's Roaring Fork Leadership Academy class. And so as part of our project civic team, we are working with CARE and Wes to work on improving pet-friendly housing in the Valley.
Music to my ears. And Wes, would you mind introducing yourselves
to
our listeners?
Absolutely. My name's Wes Boyd. I'm the director of Colorado Animal Rescue. And I'm so excited about this project with Roaring Fork Leadership Academy, and so lucky that her civic project was chosen by Meg and her team.
Yeah, that's so great. I have slowly gotten to know Roaring Fork Leadership through reporting on all the wonderful things that come out of it. So thank you for everything you're doing. Wes, I have to ask, what made you decide to do the program?
Well, this project in particular has been on my mind since I started my job at the shelter a few years ago. One of the biggest complaints from the staff and the biggest one of the big hurdles we try to overcome is all of the animals that are brought into the shelter and separated from their families when they're unable to secure housing for them. So it's just heart-wrenching for us, and I hear from the staff all the time how hard it is and how we wish we could do something about it. So we've been, you know, throwing around a lot of ideas for a couple of years now on how we can make an impact. And what I think we've come up with Team Scratch and Sniff from Roaring Fork Leadership is that we needed to really discover some of the barriers to pet-friendly housing, why so many landlords, HOAs, and property managers have difficulty allowing pets. And luckily, this team has come up with an amazing survey that's going to help us get some answers. And then we're going to move forward from there and try to get something changed in this.
Yeah, I mean, you can't address a problem without fully understanding it.
Yeah.
So that's great. That's great. Yeah, so can you kind of break down the process of how you decided on the survey questions? I mean, you have a background in landscaping, clearly. So did you kind of use your field knowledge to inform maybe from that perspective how people feel about it?
So part of the Roaring Fork Leadership program is workshop days where we learn so much about ourselves and about how to reach out to the community and make change. And our team Scratch and Sniff, is very diverse, and we come from a lot of different backgrounds. And so coming together, taking what we know from our professional and personal lives, and then taking what we're learning in the Roaring Fork Leadership Academy, we have really just joined forces and shared what we thought was a way to reach out to the community, and worked with Wes on language and what our impressions are might be the barriers for pet-friendly housing in the Valley, and then trying to ask questions to really pull from people what their personal stories are about renting in the Valley with pets and about HOAs, so that we can really dive deep into what is the biggest barrier so we can try to help fix that.
Yeah. And I mean, as somebody who asks questions for a living, that's a tall order. Those have to be very carefully crafted questions.
Yes.
Do you have a question that you could share with us, or is that like teaser, no spoilers?
I don't know if I can come up with the exact language off the top of my head, but we were really trying to pull out from different types of people. So property managers, mm-hmm. what is their biggest issue? Is it about pets that leave behind a lot of mess, or is it about the damage that's caused by the time the renters move out and not having enough security deposit? For renters, is it about not finding somewhere for the right size pet that they have? A lot of places will say 20 pounds and under, and they have a big dog. Mm-hmm. So is that their biggest barrier? Also with HOAs, a lot of HOAs have legal language in their documents that have limitations, and they just don't know how to take it out without consulting a lawyer. So is that something that we can help with? And so there's, like you said, there's a lot of meat to get into, and hopefully we asked some open-ended questions too, so people yeah. can provide their own stories. And hopefully some landlords have some great stories about renters who were really great renters and who were long-term renters who, once they found the right place, it was a good fit that they were there for a long time.
Yeah.
And took care of the property and were great pet owners. And we want to hear those stories too, so we can help spread the positive stories around the Valley.
Right, right. Yeah, because it is a nuanced issue, right? I mean, I'm clearly not an unbiased journalist in this regard, so I'm glad Will did the story. But, you know, on the one hand, I definitely, as a pet owner, I'm like, my dog is better behaved than most toddlers I've ever met. Come on now. But on the other hand, if you are the one that's invested in a property and you've rented and had your, you know, heart broken, as it were, to see your investment kind of be abused and misused, then I could see, oh my gosh, never again, right? Like, never again. So kudos to you guys for opening a dialogue between all of those different parties. Do you have a timetable for what this could look like in terms of the whole, you know, survey and information finding process?
So the survey is up online right now, and the link can be found through Colorado Animal Rescue's Facebook page. And it will be up through February. And we are offering a reward of $100 gift card to White House Pizza. Woo-hoo. That will do the drawing on March 1st. So we encourage people, if they're not already invested in the topic, that's an extra little incentive. And we hope to then take that data and really figure out what are the resources that the Valley needs to help turn this issue around.
Well, and I think your timing is just perfect, because I can't go anywhere without somebody trying to pitch a story to me about, do you know XYZ about housing? And have you thought about this angle on housing? So thank you for bringing this angle to housing. Wes, please don't make me cry with this answer, but how prevalent is it? I mean, how frequently are people forced to separate from their animals?
Well, you know, I read a really interesting statistic today on the Humane Society of the United States webpage, that 72% of all renters have a pet, and that difficulty finding housing across the country is the single largest reason that animals are in an animal shelter. Here in our valley and at CARE, we took in 59 animals last year that were displaced because of housing restrictions. So that doesn't seem like a big number, but if you could see 59 dogs and cats lined up in a row, it's a lot. And that's a lot of families who have been forced to separate from their pet. And that's not to mention the number of dogs, cats, and other pets that are living in the shelter and could have an available home. People who love pets, who want a pet, but can't find a place to live where they can have one.
And I think you just perfectly surmised the issue. I'm very, very interested in following your progress and what comes of this survey. So thank you both so much. I could talk to you about it forever, but I have 30 seconds left. So on that note, thank you everybody for joining. And to your listeners, you've just been listening to Everything Under the Sun. Happy Thursday.